Hey, it's Matt. A quick note before we get started today. This is a repeat of a show we aired last month on how Indiana's artists are handling the disruption of the pandemic. So we can't take your questions and comments live, but we would still love to hear from you. Tell us what you think of the show and what topics you'd like us to cover. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. Follow us there for topic alerts and discussion as well. Again, Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. And of course, you can find our podcast feed wherever you get podcasts. Just search All In and look for our blue and black logo. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a topic you care about.
This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We've all had to adapt to a very different world this year. So what if our profession requires us to be creative and take inspiration from the moment? How has this moment shaped art? It's a big question with many answers, and it's one we'll explore this hour. On the phone, we have four guests, all Indianapolis-based visual artists. Joy Hernandez is a painter and muralist. Joy, welcome.
Hello. Hi.
Kyle Ragsdale is the curator at the Harrison Center for the Arts and a painter. Kyle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Katrina Murray is a painter and ceramist. Hello, Katrina.
Hello, Matt.
And Matthew Aaron is a painter and muralist. Matthew, good afternoon.
Yeah, you too. Right back at you.
Joy, we'll start with you, and we'll connect this first question to a very timely news item. Yesterday, we found out that this year's Indy 500 would take place without fans in the seats. You got a great commission this year to do a piece for the race. What was it?
I'm one of the Welcome Race Fans artists this year, and I was super excited about it, you know, at the beginning and the before times, but now everything's just gotten weird, and... You know, here we are in August, and this is all something that should have been, you know, celebrated and taken place all back in May. And it's just, it's drawn out, but it's also just a really, you're excited, but I don't know. It's like a conflicted feeling.
What does it mean to be a Welcome Race Fans artist? What do you have to do, and where is your art then displayed?
You apply to the process. They've been doing this for the last 5 years. They started with 100th running for 33 artists, you know, like the field of 33, and then added five additional artists every year since. And it's something, you know, racing kind of inspired. It has to have the words Welcome Race Fans because it is, you know, like a promotional material that way. But just kind of whatever, you know, showcasing the artist, the individual artist's style or medium. They didn't really give us a whole lot of parameters to follow other than because this year originally the Brickyard was supposed to be on the July 4th weekend, and that's really close to the Memorial Day weekend when the race usually is. So they wanted it to be not IndyCar specific so that it could work for a NASCAR promotion as well. So I went with a lunar rover because I work with astronauts and stuff, but that kind of all just went by the wayside anyway when, you know, the race got pushed back to the end of this month. So
go ahead.
I say what it means, it's, you know, I'm not from Indianapolis originally, and I didn't really think about racing in any way when I, you know, until, you know, I first moved here. But it is like part of the fabric of the city, and it is fun to watch. I've become a fan, definitely watch a little more F1 than IndyCar, but I do, you know, really enjoy it. And you just see how it is just part of the life of the city. And it's really cool that the Arts Council has showcased art in Indianapolis at a time when it's really definitely sports racing arena. But like, hey, we also have this stuff going on, too. So that's kind of an honor to represent that way.
Now, your work, your specific work that you're doing for the Welcome Race Fans, for Welcome Race Fans, is being featured on a billboard. But not every artist who has... been commissioned this year for Welcome Race Fans is getting so much exposure. Where would their art normally be seen on a normal year, I guess?
For the five this year, the billboard as well as the Shine a Light light show down on the circle, that does cycle between all five of us artists. So, like, you know, my picture, Josh Betsy's picture, you know, Jingo De La Rosa's picture. It just, it'll be up for like 30 seconds. It'll flip. The billboard one has like six ads that are in between, like an Indianapolis Zoo ad or something, a Pacers ad, and then, you know, cycle through that and then show the next Welcome Race Fans artist. So we are all equally being represented. I'm just kind of vocal on Facebook and Instagram. So I think that's just where, you know, a little self-promotion helps too that way.
Sure, sure. Kyle, did I interrupt you? Were you about to say something?
I was just going to say I did one in the original cast, and in the olden days, they made posters that they put around town too. And it was kind of cool because people would collect them, and some people put them in frames, and I go to people's houses and they still have them. So it's kind of nice way to get your art out to a different audience.
Kyle, before we dig into your work, for those of us who might not be familiar, can you introduce us to the Harrison Center and what you do there?
Oh, yeah. The Harrison Center is at the corner of 16th and Delaware. It was Benjamin Harrison's church, now there for about almost 20 years, I've been the curator, and there are upwards of 30 artists here, and we have six galleries and change the art usually, except in pandemic, we change all six galleries every month, and it's, I think one thing that's great about our building, just it's a real nice community of artists and people sharing tools and ideas. And I'm very thankful, especially I think even in pandemic, the staff has worked really hard to help artists to thrive even as things were going down. So
That was going to be my next question. Like, how has the pandemic affected operations there, or the culture there? What's happening and what's not happening that would otherwise normally be during normal times?
Well, I think we were closed down. I'm not sure for how long, but some artists were working in their studios because some artists actually live here. There's apartments too. And I think we changed out some shows maybe in June. I had a show in June, and then we maybe kept most of those shows the same in July. And we have all new shows, well, mostly new shows, coming this Friday. The Harrison Center will be open. It's kind of a limited number of people let in. But the other thing I think they did really well was they pivoted to a kind of online gallery where you can buy stuff online directly. And we've never had that before. So, and sales have been kind of great. I think people are at home more and maybe not spending money on other things. And so people are buying art, which is great.
So, I mean, has this sort of shown us that you don't need to be in the presence of the physical piece? You just kind of have to see its content in order to, I mean, there's nothing like going to a show. There's nothing like going and being there among other art patrons and fans. But I guess if online sales are doing really well, that's got to be telling in some way.
I think if you had a good online presence before and people knew your work and knew what it looked like before, then I think you can be okay. But I think if you didn't have that before, I think it's hard to catch up, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think one weird thing, so I moved my studio to my garage in, I don't know, when March or whenever we had the lockdown, and I moved my monoprint press home and started making monotypes. And I posted like six or seven of them on an Instagram picture. And I sold almost all of them that was like a Wednesday, and I sold them by Friday.
Wow.
So it was really weird. And I was just thinking, we're totally screwed, you know? But it wasn't that. It was like people were, I don't know, maybe they may, I think people want to support the arts. So maybe that's part of it. I'm not sure.
Kyle, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what's happening. People are at home and they are scrolling through their phones and at the same time looking at empty walls. And people are buying art right now that weren't because of online presence. If you can be in the feed, then you can sell art.
Matthew Aaron,
it's quite all right.
Matt, how has this moment inspired your work? I mean, has it given you a creative energy or has it blocked you in some way?
Matt, if COVID didn't bring out your hustle, you don't have a hustle in you. So I'm telling you, I mean, that's just the way I am. I was grounded when I was a kid. I've always been kind of a introverted, stay-at-home person. This isn't hard for me to keep myself isolated. I use social media and sell paintings in just the way that Kyle was just talking about, his monoprints working. I sell paintings on a regular basis that way. I also do mural work. This thing had a lot of business owners rethinking their interior, and I was lucky enough to be included in several of those. So I worked on the inside of a bunch of bars and restaurants, painting murals for them while they were closed down. And I've been busy.
You've been more busy. Well, we've seen a lot of those kind of businesses close for good because of all this. Obviously, your clients are doing okay considering, or they wouldn't hire you to do that. What kind of, I guess in our last minute, we've got to go to a break, but what kind of sense do you get from them about how they're doing?
For example, I painted a very large mural inside of the Alley Cat, which is a classic dive bar here in town.
If you don't know where it is, you don't belong there.
That's right. They were in no hurry to open. They wanted to make sure things were safe. That seemed like, you know, they've been there for 40 years. They're well invested in the community. They're lovely people. And great to work for. So long live the Alley Cat, as far as I'm concerned.
We're talking about Indiana's artists and the pandemic. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 2 minutes. This is All In. Hey, it's Matt. Before we get back to the show, a quick note. This is an encore presentation of a show we aired last month on Indiana's artists and how the pandemic has affected their work and their business. So we can't take your questions and comments live, but we would like for you to know that the artists on the show today represent the Harrison Center for the Arts and the Circle City Industrial Complex, both in Indianapolis. And both of those facilities are hosting First Fridays this week, if you're interested. They, of course, have social distancing guidelines in effect and additional sanitation procedures to keep patrons safe. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking to four visual artists from Indiana about how the pandemic has affected their work and their income, for better or for worse. And we're joined by Joy Hernandez, a painter and muralist. Kyle Ragsdale is the curator of the Harrison Center at the Harrison Center for the Arts and a painter himself. Matthew Aaron is a painter and muralist. And Katrina Murray is a painter and ceramist. And Katrina, I want to bring you into the conversation. You do a lot of work with clay, of course. That requires a kiln, which not everybody has. It's big. It's expensive to operate. What happened to the one that you used?
A business in CCIC where we both work kind of folded, and she and I were like working on a business plan as far as helping me to succeed in doing what I was doing. And so unbeknownst to me, her business plan folded, her business folded as I was gearing up to do a lot of ceramic work for a solo show at Gallery 924. And that made it impossible for me to do that show because I didn't have access to a kiln to create a body of work that would fill an entire gallery space. So I had to postpone that show. But fortunately, Shannon Linker at 924 said, anytime that you're ready, just let us know and we'll give you a spot. So I am in the process of working on that work, but it has to go to a kiln pretty quickly. I can't just have brittle clay sitting around. So my fellow artist here, Matthew, was saying that he knew someone, and so did Joy. So, and I've called another place. So I've got a few leads into getting that going. But I'd rather have one of my own.
As I understand, the business that folded, who was your access to a kiln, that was pandemic related as well, right?
Right. She had, it was Indie Artsy. Julie Edwards had planned to be at a convention at the Home and Garden Show. So she had paid for her booth. She had bought, made 100 pots, had bought a lot of plants for all those pots, extended herself financially to do it with display equipment. And then the day of, it shut down. So she tumbled out of business, which affected my business. So it's problematic. It was problematic. So my story is a little different than the other three, where they're working. Mine is like, oh, now what do I do? I also had received a grant, a creative renewal grant at the beginning, at the end of last year for the 2020 creative renewal process. So, which meant $10,000 to do whatever you wanted to do. Dream big. And I was planning to go to Greece. I'd already bought the tickets. I was leaving at the beginning of April. The president said no international travel. The airline canceled my tickets, which they still have my money for that. And I am still trying to work out how to make that. Do I rewrite my grant proposal, which is an option, or do I plan to do it next year? But I just don't know how coronavirus will mutate, so to speak.
Indeed.
So that's where I am, yeah. And as Kyle was saying, you know, if you were already online selling work, then you're probably doing pretty well. Well, I was selling work out of my studio with direct interactions with people and interior designers and direct mail. You know, I'm also a designer, graphic designer. So I had two revenue streams that have been impacted by COVID because I would work as a designer for small businesses. Those small businesses' budgets have been shrinking. They've been reusing their marketing materials, and that revenue stream for me is dried up as well. So essentially, I'm unemployed until I can figure it out.
Okay. That was going to be my other question. How else have you supplemented your income?
Well, I have applied for the unemployment protection and then the PPP small business loans. I have one of those, and that's helped to get me on my feet. That's given me time to, solve, you know, get back my brain back in mode of like, okay, I need to work, but I need to work in a different way. And how's that going to be? And just get back on my feet and start a new plan, create my, you know, website so that I can sell online and get the social media, you know, pivot to online, like Kyle was saying, which is harder for someone who hasn't been doing it that way. So, but I have sold some work that way, but not what I was selling before. My trajectory for the first quarter was looking really bright, and then all of a sudden, boom, done. And then all the potential momentum that was building this year from, you know, being recognized through the Creative Renewal Grant and being excited about traveling and learning a new skill abroad, it just truncated that thinking. So I was just not able to transition as well mentally as a lot of people were, because normally artists are introverts and they just work from home or they work from their studios, which I do have a studio, and that's where I was prior to the grant. But then it was changing me to think in an international and national way, which I was very excited to stop thinking in, like smaller and locally, but more globally. And so now it's like shrunk the world back down for me. So it's interesting, very interesting.
And Joy, was that?
So with
go
that,
right ahead.
Some of the Arts Council had set up a relief fund. And Katrina and I have talked about it before.
for $500 for artists every 30 days. And Kyle had also mentioned about prints in the past for Welcome Race fans. And this year they are doing the prints and Giclée prints. And besides the printing fee and a small percentage that goes to us artists that design the prints, the rest of the money taken in from those prints goes to that artist relief fund to keep it going, because there are a lot of artists like Katrina that they're in the same boat.
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. Speaking mm-hmm. of prints and speaking of trips, Kyle, you had a trip plan that got canceled this year as well. Where were you going to go and what was it for?
I got a grant through St. Paul's Episcopal, and I was going to Florence for 2 weeks. So it was a printmaking monotype workshop that got canceled. So, yeah, that was kind of the super sad part of this. The pivot part, the night that we were supposed to be in Florence, we started watching Rick Steves travel shows on the just watching old videos. And then that led me down this path of looking at Vienna and then the Holy Roman Empire. And then I got really fascinated by Victoria and her children and grandchildren. And so that's kind of this whole, I've been really fascinated by history, but all from just watching YouTube videos, which is a different kind of thing.
Well, and a lot of your work is inspired by history. At least that's what I would glean by looking at it. I don't know. I mean, is that trip, are things like that things that you consider to be on hold? Do you feel like that's something that you could do next year or are planning to do in the future?
Yeah, we didn't. You could have got a refund, and we chose to hopefully go next year if things are in a better place. So I'm hopeful. I think every day we're not sure what tomorrow's going to be, you know.
Yeah.
But
Joy Hernandez, we heard from Matthew Aaron earlier about doing murals. Have you been doing more murals this year?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And actually, with the trip thing, I was supposed to go to Australia this November.
Oh my gosh!
To paint murals there as part of a festival that town is holding, and they pushed it back to January or maybe March, but we have a kind of a drop dead kind of deadline of like October 30th, I've heard that, you know, if this country doesn't get its act together by then, they're just going to push it back to like next November, like a full year beyond, because, you know, their winters and summers are different. And, but locally, yeah, as soon as it got warm, I was, you know, painting a garage, the side of a brick house. Matthew Aaron and I are working on a mural in the Circle City Industrial Complex, tomorrow. And so yeah, it's picked up, and so it's kind of, you know, the lemonade out of lemons kind of deal. Like, well, I've got the time to do this, but it's also something, you know, I know Matthew can speak to that too, that if you're outside or in a building where nobody is around you, you just kind of show up with your paint, your bucket, and your ladder or your whatever, and you go to town, and everybody's away from you because it's just something you're doing, and you are making, you know, money, making some ends meet that way. That, you know, like I've had some canvas sales and that sort of thing too. Just the online hustle pretty much, but that definitely has made up for the lack of First Fridays in my life, which was definitely something, you know, that needed income that I had. So I feel fortunate that last August kind of murals picked up for me here locally. And painting for, you know, in other places for a while, but, you know, just here in Indianapolis. And then winter happened, and, you know, then COVID happened. But I feel super fortunate that my own local painting path took that twist. Otherwise, I don't know. I mean, I know what I'd kind of do with my time, but I think I'd also be just sitting there antsy, just wanting to do something. And so I at least have that to take up my brain, too.
Well, you mentioned First Fridays. That's coming back this week, right?
Yeah,
yay!
And you know what I've missed about First Friday is just being around my fellow artists, because there's that creative exchange, which even if it's just like energy, where you're just around like-minded people that I haven't been around since March's First Friday was the last one we had at the CCIC. And, you know, just kind of, you know, we did try to do virtual First Fridays and that sort of thing for Full Circle Nine Gallery there, but it's just, it's not the same. We just need to feed off each other, and I kind of miss that. So,
Katrina, how might that be different this year?
The CCIC has a lot of, nooks and crannies in it, and little pinch points where people can like cross each other, and lots of doors and entries and exits. So we've decided to do an indoor-outdoor thing to disperse the crowd a little bit. And we'll be on the fence along Pogue's Run Trail, and some of the gallery spaces will be open, the larger spaces. And we're essentially putting a tree, or placing artists between trees along the line, so along the fence. So hopefully there'll be really great social distancing there, and it'll be a fun time.
I'd like to get your comment on this message from Pam on Facebook, who says, I'm a visual artist from Fishers. All my art festivals are canceled. Most of my teaching workshops were canceled or are very small with social distancing. My galleries were closed and now have limited hours. So, yes, this has affected me greatly. I'm learning to pivot and trying to learn how to take my teaching virtually. I have more studio time and have found freedom and taken my art onto a new level because of the extra time with the cancellations. I still have studio rent due each month, and so it's been extremely difficult. Yeah, Katrina, does that resonate with you?
Yeah, it does. Right before, let's say March, I sold a painting and paid my rent up for 6 months and on my studio. And I didn't have to pay during this whole time, but I also didn't get to use the space either. And then now rent is going to be due. And so if Rachel's listening, the manager of the CCIC, I'm not in a hurry to leave, but I do have to consider that's a chunk of money that isn't coming in. So I'm hoping this First Friday is great, and going forward, it continues to be great. Otherwise, I might be using a wall at Full Circle Nine with joy, renting a space.
Hey, I'll welcome you any day.
I know. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Matthew, Aaron, as long as we're talking about traveling or not traveling, going back to the traveling line, you showed some of your work in New York this year. Were you able to actually be there for it?
Yoo-hoo.
I think he's asking me.
Okay.
Did you also, Kyle?
I have a show up in at the Bowery Gallery right now in Chelsea. It's like you just have one piece. There's like, I don't know, 40 artists or something in it. But it's online. So it's kind of a cool, nice thing to have.
Yeah. And Matthew, Aaron, you were showing in New York too, right?
Yeah, Vanderplas, which is on the Lower East Side on Orchard. And such a wonderful gallery. I love going there. I love being part of the openings. I didn't go. New York was a mess at the time. Most of my collaborators that I work with live in Brooklyn, and I didn't go. It was just too scary to try and go into New York at the time.
Have you gotten a sense, though, for the scene there and for, I guess, the patronage of art in New York? I mean, New York's doing a little better now, but it sounds like you were showing at a time when that was definitely not the case.
That show was scheduled for, you know, the break, right when things really, you know, New York got hit very, very hard. And the show was scheduled to open right then. So I had already sent the pieces, which is part of the process, is you send the pieces ahead of you so that the gallery has time to hang them. So they had the art. I knew when the release date was, and I just decided against going.
Is that against any kind of etiquette? I mean, are you expected to be there, or were they very understanding?
Galleries always seem to be understanding if you can't make it. Sometimes I just don't make it. It doesn't, I think it's different with everyone. I'm sure each person looks at it different. And I'm sure Kyle has a different perspective on that even.
Kyle?
Yeah, I've been to this. I was in this show a couple of years ago. But the artists are from all over the country. So I think the majority of them don't make it. I think local shows probably, I think you definitely, people buy work like they want a connection with a person, not necessarily just the artwork. And they're interested to know you and your story. And so I definitely think in local shows, it's like really helpful if they can meet you in person.
There's a lot more to talk about this hour with four Indiana artists whose professional lives have been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Matt Pelsa. We're back in less than 2 minutes. This is All In. Hey, it's Matt. One final note. Today's show originally aired last month, so we can't get your questions and comments to our panel. But feel free to connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Let us know what you think of the show and what you think we should cover in the future. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelsa. Today we're talking with a panel of visual artists from the Indianapolis area about how the pandemic has changed things for them professionally and creatively. We have with us Joy Hernandez, a painter and muralist. Kyle Ragsdale is the curator at the Harrison Center for the Arts and a painter himself. Katrina Murray is a painter and ceramist, and Matthew Aaron is a painter and muralist. And we have a voicemail ready here from Brian. Let's listen.
Hello, this is Brian Hall from Zionsville, Indiana, and I am an artist and founder of the Maker Factory Makerspace in Lebanon, Indiana. And wanted to say that through the pandemic, I seem to be pretty busy as well. I'm kind of wondering, as the pandemic happened, everything closed down and shut down, America really went through a slowing like it hasn't done since my lifetime. And everybody's reflected more, and I believe art has a lot in common with that sentiment, and seems like people are reflecting and participating in the art and experience of artists and how we can rebuild our communities. Thanks.
Kyle Ragsdale, what kind of value comes from the world slowing down? Can that open things up creatively?
Well, for me, I think it's helped me rethink my career and who I am. I think I'm kind of a romantic artist. I like old-timey things and things that are very out of fashion in art right now. And it's helped me just to slow down and to be who I am and to be happy about that and not to try to fit into another mold. I think, I guess, just to slow down and think and analyze what's working in your life and what's not and what you want to spend time on, you know, how, what you value. So we enjoy our neighbors and our yard and nature, and I enjoy making artworks, but I think it's made me analyze what I enjoy doing and who I am as an artist, and I think that's been great.
We got a comment on Twitter from Laura who says, we need to be having a serious conversation about how art can facilitate necessary social change. Katrina, I'd like your thoughts on this. Laura goes on to say there are lots of examples of how this has happened during the pandemic. Katrina, you've been creating some pieces, I guess, based on the recent protests. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. Since I've been closed up here, I've been more introspective and working on some ceramic high relief portrait pieces. And I've been focusing on faces that I know that I've seen in the crowds, that I've seen on news, that I've seen. I feel like I'm worldly as a person who's lived abroad and done some study abroad and is in the arts community. But with all of this going on in our society right now, I'm seeing faces or more specifically recognizing them. And so I'm making faces that are like people with the masks that they're wearing now, or black and brown people, or a woman with a burqa. I mean, trying to represent religion, or transgender faces. So I've got an idea for a body of work where these are all just very small pieces, but I'm thinking about humanity and the vastness of humanity versus, you know, my small little world. So yes, I think the caller of the email, right? Yes, we do need to do that. I feel guilty about having this privilege of being an artist and not acting on it. But at the same time, I have to give myself permission, and every artist has to give themselves permission to just sit with whatever they're feeling and make work on that. Like Kyle was saying, he's got to enjoy his yard. I enjoy mine as well. And then you can go back refreshed and make that work and bring it back to the public and let them see it and perceive what you're seeing, or change their minds, or help them think of something they hadn't considered before. So yeah, it's really important.
Matthew Aaron, is social change or societal upheaval a creative motivator for you?
Sure is. This slowing of America left the fast lane open for me. I embrace this. I think that this has given us all an opportunity to use our voices louder. While the government was still denying that this was real, calling this a hoax, I contacted my friends in Brooklyn, and we wrote a book. We wrote the new nursery rhymes for our modern-day plague. Called Rosie and the New World Order. It's being published by a company called House of Rue. And to me, this only gave us a box to stand on. Everyone's looking at art. Everyone needs some comfort. Everyone needs to take their mind off the TV. We have the opportunity to do that, and you have a responsibility to use your voice for something. People are looking to you to for output. You know, they want something from you. They know you as an artist. You owe them that. So get on your box and yell.
Well said. Yeah.
Can you directly attribute any of your work or the work of your collaborators on this new project to any kind of a tone, I guess, among the your work's patronage or just fans of art? I don't know. I guess how has your art or the work of your collaborators really kind of changed things or changed minds?
I wish I knew. I don't always get feedback from people because I work in the street so often. If I knew what really worked, I would focus more on just that. But you don't really get feedback on the daily input that street art often is. I'm an alternative to the newspaper in many ways, where my voice might just be a bad opinion or an unwanted opinion. And that's the way it's viewed. I don't make art for other people. I make it to express what I want to express. I love it when other people like it. But if I worried about what other people, how they were receiving it, then I'd have to think about being controversial and what that would, you know, that sounds like a lot of work.
We got a message from John on Twitter who says, I'm a filmmaker and was starting to pick up at the beginning of this year. Hearing all of these stories are making me feel less alone. Could there be more of a community formed around artists who might feel isolated during all of this? Or do you think, Joy, I guess I'll ask you, do you think that has already been done with some of these efforts to pay artists who might have lost income during this time?
Yeah, I think, you know, that I definitely want to applaud the quickness of, like, the Arts Council's measures of getting the relief fund going. But then, you know, we also, like with Full Circle Nine Gallery, we had to kind of just check on each other a lot. You know, there's 24 of us. And so we had already, we'd formed our own community. And over the years, you know, I used to manage the art bank as well. Over the years, you know, we gathered up our own little communities, like the artists that were more just out there, and you know, we're all like Katrina said, a lot of us are introverts and such things, and but we just want to, like if you seek out your own little bubbles, you know, your own groups of people. The Harrison Center definitely have, you guys have your group. The Stutz artists have their group, and so there's artists in there out in the world that aren't tied to a group, this or that, but you need to seek out your like-minded people to just kind of, I mean, to bounce that creative energy off of each other. But then that comes in handy when these kind of, these times happen, you know, that you have your people to lean on. As our friend Nancy Lee said, you know, she has a deep bench. That always struck with me the last couple of years since I heard her say it. But you have your artists that you lean on, that you work with, that you bounce ideas off of. And then when the world goes sideways, you know, these are your artists that you sound off and say, hey, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not doing well, or hey, what, you know, I need a resource, like, you know, like a kiln or something, you know, mm-hmm. and just to listen to each other. I have our treasurer at Full Circle Nine is an emotional CPR coach, as well as a anti-bullying speaker and trainer and diversity trainer. And she's been, Kimberly Ewing, she has been, you know, all over it, trying to make sure that, you know, we're all okay, that, you know, we have to make sure she's okay. And just the people.
She's pretty dynamic.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you seek out your community and people can reach out to you, but you also, you do need to recognize within yourself, like, hey, you know, aren't alone. I need to go find like-minded people to inspire me creatively or to support me when things go weird.
Joy, you've also been offering up some free advice in the form of Facebook Live workshops. What have you been doing?
That was part of for Full Circle Nine, we did virtual First Fridays. So from 6 to 9 p.m., the normal time that we would have First Fridays, we would just do 15-minute posts or videos or Facebook Lives among the artists while we were all in our corners, our houses around the city. And for me, I mean, sometimes I was at a mural site when it happened to be 6 o'clock and I would kick off our First Fridays. But I think it was May, I had gotten some frames that an artist at the CCIC was getting rid of for free. He's just like, here, take them, get them out of here. And I'm like, great, you know, great. But they were just the wooden frames, and I needed to get some canvas. I didn't have, I didn't want to go to the fabric stores. Like, things were, you know, still weird, shut down, kind of weird. So I went to the hardware store and got the drop cloth canvases and was going to, you know, stretch these canvases. But so I did a Facebook Live of that, you know, like, this is how you stretch a canvas. Just, you know, something to talk about for 15 minutes, stapling while I'm talking and that kind of thing. But, you know, just to, you know, some people had asked me, well, how do you do that? And I'm like, well, this is how you do it. Tune in and watch, you know. And, mm-hmm. I mean, it was, a freebie one. I know a lot of artists are wanting to give away their skills for free at a time when they don't have a lot of income coming in. So, like, instructional videos or teaching, like the other email had mentioned before, you know, they got to figure out a way to monetize that. Just because you're looking for something to do for your kids, oh, have them learn how to do ceramics, just do a tutorial for it for free. Well, that artist needs to be paid for their time, much like Pam and Fisher's. And so, you know, doing a little freebie demo of something like that real fast, hey, that's one thing. But definitely sign up and support those kind of online classes, because those artists need that income too.
And we got another idea from Thea on Facebook. This is a nice message. She says, my husband and I live in Lafayette. We still have our income, so we decided to spend our stimulus on helping artists and musicians. After watching a local artist create a piece on Facebook Live, we purchased it as our pandemic piece. He framed it and hung it for us. That really helped us, she says. We recently attended a show at Tippecanoe Arts Federation and bought a piece. The artist was there, and that made all the difference. Kyle Ragsdale, have you heard of people buying pandemic pieces? I mean, you're doing a lot of online sales, perhaps directly connected to the fact that we're all spending more time at home. Is this a thing now?
That definitely is a thing. I've heard two people say that that's how they spent their, you know, their check on art. So, and I had a weird thing. I was working on a commission of something someone had seen on Good Bones, and it was for someone in California. And I couldn't get them to actually like it. Like, I kept painting it and painting it. And then it wasn't working out. So I put it on Facebook, and someone else bought it. after they had seen it on Facebook. So sometimes things work out a different way.
Kyle, when you think about... Oh, go right ahead.
Yeah.
What's that now?
I just had a client purchase a painting because she was having Zoom meetings, and she had a gray wall behind her. So she
yeah.
said, I need something back here. I thought that was
That's
perfect.
Great.
Kyle, when
yeah.
you think about the work that you were doing at this time last year under so-called normal circumstances versus the work you're doing now amid all of this, would you say that there's a difference in tone or content?
It's really weird. I don't know why, but I was painting people kind of in precarious, like, trees or towers, and they look like they're waiting for something, but it looks like it's not going to work out, maybe.
Mm.
So I was doing that last fall, and I don't know why, but it feels like the moment. So I don't understand why that's happening.
Mm. Clairvoyant, perhaps.
I don't know, like a... They seem like they're kind of in danger, but they're maybe celebrating anyway. So I think, that's the lesson to, even though we're in a perilous place, maybe to be who we are and, you know, do our dance, even in this time.
Just a little bit of time left. Matthew Aaron, I'm assuming here, correct me if I'm wrong, that the pandemic has given you a little extra time. Have you used that time to branch out creatively and try different art forms?
Interesting. Were you, you've been researching me? I just took an internship. I just became a tattoo artist.
Ah.
So I could tattoo some of my, illustrations that I'm known for, so that I could tattoo those on people. I learned how to do that during this time, and I've been practicing away. So that I'll be working at Untitled Ink in Broad Ripple.
So yeah. how many have you done so far? Do you have the count handy?
I've done three.
And all original pieces too? Nothing commissioned?
They are original pieces. It's my penmanship. I make this little dynamite stick that shows up around town from time to time. My little drawings. I did a fly that I did, you know, just a Sharpie drawing of a fly. Yeah, bad tattoos. That's me. Three. I've done three.
No.
Actually, I have a line of people that have asked me for them, but I have said to each one of them, I'm only this far in. You should wait until I'm a little better. And people are like, no. I want one of the early, like when you'll mess it up. Because once you're good, then forget it.
I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time today. Joy Hernandez is a painter and muralist. Joy, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Kyle Ragsdale is the curator at the Harrison Center for the Arts and a painter himself. Kyle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Katrina Murray is a painter and ceramist. Katrina, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And yes. Matthew Aaron is a painter and muralist. Matthew, we really appreciate it.
Matt, thanks for letting me talk with all these cool people.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.